Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon, Hard Knock Radio. Still talking to folks about the aftermath of the election. You know, spot checking with people all over the country who've been on the ground and involved in various capacities with organizing folks and getting people politically aware. One of those people is Michael Skolznik. He's with Global Grind. That's a publication and an organization. He works with Russell Simmons very closely and the political efforts that they undertake. Michael, I wanted to have on the show because not only does he do a lot of political work, but you were also a surrogate. So that gave you kind of a unique situation in terms of how things were going to unfold under Barack Obama's campaign. So let me start with that, first of all. Did you expect a win? Did your camp expect a win Tuesday night?
Davey, it's always good to be with you, man. As a fan of your work, I appreciate you having me on. I think we knew it was going to be a tough fight. We knew that there was it was going to be very close. We certainly had no arrogance or no sort of cockiness going into Tuesday thinking that it was going to be easy. We knew we had to turn out people. We knew we had to get folks to the polls in states like Florida and Ohio and Colorado and Wisconsin and Virginia. We knew that it was certainly going to be a long, 12 hours of voting in many of these states. But I think we felt very confidently that we would win. I think most importantly, the people won. Rather than President Obama just continuing his job for 4 years, I think this was once again, a movement by the people. And not only did we win another 4 years in the White House, we saw some amazing, amazing people get new jobs, whether it was Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts or Tammy Duckworth in Illinois or Tony Cardenas in Los Angeles, a new congressman out of Los Angeles. I mean, really, really some amazing people going to Washington to continue this effort.
When we talked before, and we had you on our national broadcast at the DNC, we talked about there was definitely a lack of enthusiasm for President Obama, especially amongst many demographics who came out in big numbers in 08. African Americans, many were very skeptical and lukewarm. Many students definitely were not feeling this president. Some of it had to do with policy. A lot of it had to do with feeling that they weren't being addressed or taken very seriously. How did that get bridged? Was there a bridging of that gap, or did people really come out of fear of seeing all the voter suppression and all the craziness that was being said by the GOP, the war on women and legitimate rape and all kind of stuff that just made you go to the polls just to make sure that they don't get in?
I think that we did a tremendous amount of work, to reach out to young people and reach out to the African-American community and reach out to Latinos and women and a lot of work of folks who have been, sort of underrepresented over the years, to include them in conversations throughout the campaign but how this country would move forward over the next 4 years. I think when you began to see, it's really easy to be cynical in this country and think politics is a bad word and that they're all the same. But when you began to see this really, truly big differences between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, I think folks who'd be affected the most by Mitt Romney really began to appreciate the fight that Barack Obama has in him and certainly his commitment to those communities was evident. I think throughout the past probably 3 months, it was much more highlighted sort of against the Mitt Romney. It's very difficult, I think, to communicate during your administration when Republicans are just trying to shut you down and make you a one-term president and try to communicate all the successes that you've had. Because oftentimes, as we know in media, negativity sort of is more interesting than positive news. Right. And so I think with the president, he had a chance to really tell his story over the past 3 months, and people, it resonated with people. I don't think there was ever an enthusiasm gap. I was one who was saying for the past few years that young people are more motivated than ever. People of color, I think, are more motivated than ever. I think it's much more our responsibility to include them in this process. We traveled the country to Ohio and to Florida three times and to North Carolina and to Illinois and Louisiana. I mean, I was all over the country, California, in the past 4 weeks. And I was talking to folks on the ground, and I did a radio interview last week, and they asked me that question, do you think folks are going to show up? And I knew they were going to show up. The voter suppression stuff was I think, a catalyst for folks to realize that people don't want young people and people of color and even some senior citizens to live a good life in this country.
Right.
They're trying to lock them out. And we create a 2 o'clock on election day. We realized that we might have one big issue. And the one big issue was, will people stay in line? These lines were 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, 9 hours long. And will people stay in line? So we went to the social media, you know, sort of stratosphere and to our friends, and we created a quick hashtag called Stay in Line and just encourage everyone to stay in line. And I was talking on an interview last night that I think people were, it was like a battle call. It was like, we are going to stay in line. We are not going to. People were voting while Barack Obama was giving his victory speech at 1:35 a.m. Eastern time.
Right.
Well, they were still voting.
But this I think, kind of underscores the point. And if you're tuning in, we're talking with Michael Skolznik from Global Grind about the election. The goal becomes voting. The goal becomes getting him reelected. And that has its place and can be a good thing, but it doesn't tell the whole story. For example, there's a big rally today up at the Cal campus, because tuitions are still 300% high. And many people may say, well, while it's good to have this president back in the White House, how do those people who've been organizing even before Barack Obama was a candidate for president, how do they get really seated at the table? Because they've done tremendous organizing for years and years, you know, to fight back, you know, to get these propositions passed and all that. And what I'm saying is, how does that partnership of people standing in line to make sure that somebody gets elected result in people really having a serious seat at the table? When do we see more Michael Skolzniks, because you're a young guy like some of those students, would we see more of them on the Sunday morning shows? Would we see more of them really at the seats of these tables talking about policies and sharing their ideas and best practices outside of an election?
Well, I think that's an excellent point. And I think that part of it is their responsibility and part of it is our responsibility. They're meaning the government. I think if you looked at, I'm a UCLA graduate. I fought for years on tuition hikes and on Prop 209 in California. So my heart is certainly with any student in this country, especially in the UC system, who is struggling to pay their fees. I think if you look at what happened this morning, you had this, there's a lot of stuff going on about the Latino vote. And the Republican Party sort of woke up out of their hangover and realized the only Latino they have in their party who resonates with anybody is Marco Rubio. And Marco Rubio told them yesterday, sort of no thank you to a leadership position in the Senate. And if you look at what they said, what they're saying this morning is now they're saying we need to have some immigration reform. We need to compromise on immigration reform. Now, immigration reform was a Republican idea, a bipartisan idea, you know, 8 years ago. And George W. Bush was the one in his second term. We said that was going to make his sort of legacy issue. And it got co-opted by the right wing sort of Tea Party members and very, you know, extreme conservatives. So, you know, so Latinos went to the polls, and now Republicans are talking about immigration reforms. They realize that this is a constituency that they have to deal with. I think in terms of all these youth organizers around the country, young people have done incredible work, not just in the past 4 years, but in the past decade or past 20 years, for that matter, for many of us.
Well, let's stop right there for a second, Michael, because one of the big issues was around immigration reform. And 1.5 million people got deported under Barack Obama. That means families. And I know a few of those families that felt they were caught between a rock and a hard place because a family member is not here. They also see some draconian measures and very much a lot of resistance and intolerance on the right. But they also were damaged on the left. But this was a group of people that brought millions of people out in 2006 and had been organizing well beyond a political campaign, that only now we're really starting to have a discussion on immigration reform. But it's after 1.5 million have been deported, and it's after SB 1070, and it's after HB 86 in Alabama. This is what I mean. Why weren't more of those dreamers, so to speak, at the table from Jump Street? Why did they have to march 1,500 miles to the White House, you know, to make an appeal within the first 2 years of Obama and not necessarily, and not be there ahead of time because they had already been organizing? That's what I'm trying to get at. How do we make sure that these seats are at the table, or do we have to go in another direction as younger people or particular demographics?
Well, I think you make some good points. I think the first 4 years, the first 2 years of the administration, you know, this guy was trying to dig us out of the worst recession we've seen, you know, in 70 years. And I think there was a lot of folks who should have been at the table who might not have gotten a seat, and probably were overlooked because of just absolute, you know, emergency care on an economy that was going into a depression quicker than we could imagine. I do think, you know, I've thought a lot about this over the years, and I've, no matter if it's Barack Obama or Mitt Romney or George W. Bush, I think as young people, you know, we have to think in not 4 year terms, but in terms of 40-year terms. And what I see a lot in Washington in terms of our representation is young people that dream of being senators and presidents, but have no connection to what's going on in real communities. Young people who want to play the game, not just with the White House, but with anybody in Washington, and have absolute no connection to the struggles of real people in this country. So I don't look to them as leaders. I don't go to them for leadership. I don't involve myself in what they do. I'm not interested in it. I come from New York. I don't live in Washington. I live in New York City. I live in Brooklyn. This is my home. It has been my home since my birth. And I want to continue my life with real people. So I think what we need to do with folks who work in the communities and folks, you know, I was in Staten Island, and Far Rockaway this weekend. I'll be back again, you know, again this weekend on Saturday. This past weekend, I'll be back again this weekend. And people were saying, my friends were saying to me, "Oh my God, you're so great. What am I great for? To go help my people? This is what we're supposed." It's like Chris Rock said back in the, you know, in one of my favorite, you know, bits he did about, you know, men taking care of their fathers. I take care of my kid. So what do you want, a cookie? Like, we got to do what we're supposed to do. And so as young people who are in the communities doing community work, I think we have to come together, and then we have to push for those who have some power and those who have some voice and those who have some access. We got to use those folks in the front of the line to open some doors. But once those doors are open, we all got to come in.
Well, how do we do that? You know, let's you know, and I'm asking this because now he's in his second term. So he doesn't have the pressure of getting new on the job, having to, you know, deal with all that, you know, give him a chance to get his feet warmed up. Feet have been warmed up. He's now reelected. He, ironically, is back in the same position that he was in 2008 with the potential financial upheaval because of the fiscal, so-called fiscal cliff. But with that being said, based upon the organizing that you do, you know, outside of being a surrogate, because you were doing this stuff way before you, you know, did any stuff with the Prez, what do all these folks who never stopped organizing need to do in order to push? You know, here in California, you got an all-blue slate. You got the blue Congress people, the senators, you know, the governor. They passed the propositions. But now what would a group of people that I'm going to see up at the UC Berkeley campus need to do now in order to really be heard above and beyond what they've done here, but in those halls of power?
Well, look, I go to work every single day for those young people that you're talking about. And my door is certainly always open. My email address is editor-in-chief@globalgrind.com. Editor-in-chief@globalgrind.com. Or I'm on Twitter, which is at my name, Michael, S-K-O-L-N-I-K, Michael Skolnick. I'm on Twitter. My email address, I think I have a little bit of access. I am humbled and honored to take anyone's email, anyone's phone call, anyone's meeting who is trying to push our generation forward, and will do anything I possibly can to get them a seat at the table. I think we got to look together and use the resources that we have. We have some incredible young people. They made the president, deal with the Dream Act and get the little piece of accomplishment that we got with the executive order. I hope we get the Dream Act passed during the next year, next 2 years of this administration. That was, as you mentioned, young people, some of them my dear friends, who marched to Washington and demanded that they be heard. I think we have some incredible leaders. I think that we just have to use our resources better. The problem with young people in general is the only demographic that you grow out of, right? If you're black, you're black for your whole life. If you're a woman, you're a woman for your whole life. If you're Jewish, you're Jewish your whole, make more or less your whole life. Right? You can convert, but if you can convert, then you're going to be Catholic or you're going to be a Protestant.
Right,
but if you're a young person at a certain age, you grow out.
Right. But it's going to take a while for a lot of people who are deemed young in the political sense to grow out of it. So some of these people who are 20 are going to still seem or going to be perceived as young all the way up into their 40s.
Certainly. The reason why I say that is because politicians, the political system, don't take us as seriously because they know their demographic at a certain point changes. Right. So if you have a Al Sharpton who's been a leader in the black community for 40 years, you can't name a leader in the youth community, really. I mean, you might be able to, but the regular media can't, who's been around for 40 years, who's been fighting for young people for 40 years. So I think in that, Al Sharpton will constantly
But the issues are still the same. The issues of, whatever is afflicting people, access to education, access to health, all these issues are the same. So I'm just trying to communicate and figure out. I mean, it's great that you can be a conduit because you're doing, as you said, what somebody in your position should do. You're giving access and you're making sure that you look out and you're not doing what the resume builders that we often see in the halls of Congress are doing. Like, I'm just here to get a resume, so I don't really care about the community. But are there other things that can happen where we see the type of attention that needed to be paid to these demographics as it was around election time? How can that continue outside of the election time where they're like, I really need to keep talking with y'all, above and beyond elections?
I think, David, this has been the lifelong struggle that I've seen during my lifetime is, as young people, how do we, A, stay engaged? So it's not just on them to talk to us. It's on us to talk to them. Right. So we know that our friends get excited around election time. The folks we're trying to organize, we know they get excited around election time because there's a lot of excitement in the country. The hard part is, the midterms or not even forget an election, just a piece of legislation. If I look at the black community currently and there is the desperate need for jobs, because the unemployment rate in the black community overall is 14.3%. Unemployment for the black young black community is in the 20s and sometimes in the 50s. Right. If I hear politicians talk about agendas and I constantly hear agendas saying my agenda for the black community is jobs, jobs, jobs. But I know, because I work in the black community, that there will be no jobs coming to the black community until we end the war on drugs. We create a real program to eradicate poverty and we have truly affordable education and quality education. And then we can talk about jobs. So what I've encouraged people to do is, let's have honest conversations about where we are as communities. I don't think necessarily the issues are the same today than they were when my parents were young, and that youth movement, changed a lot in this country. I don't think that the war on drugs has decimated communities of color across this country. And that's the past 30 years. And we've seen it, from the beginning of the war on drugs, the past maybe 40 years now, but now it's just completely decimated the black and the brown communities. So I think those issues are issues that we got to deal with that are somewhat new. Issues on immigration are new issues that we're dealing with, on issues on even on healthcare. These issues weren't existing 20, 25 years ago, but people didn't have access to healthcare and they were dying because they were going broke. I'm going bankrupt because they didn't have the right health care. So, I think that this is, we have thousands of organizers who just worked the streets to get this president elected. We got to figure out a mechanism for all of us to come together, whether you call a meeting, I call a meeting, we call a meeting, but there's many meetings, multiple meetings. We got to know each other. We got to support each other. We got to be looking out for each other. So when we do get that meeting with President Obama, or we do get that meeting with Senator, you know, Boxer or Senator Gillibrand or whoever wants to say, or Mayor Villagrosa, that we're prepared to say this is exactly what we want and this is when we want it. And if we don't get it, we're going to vote you out of office. The first time I met Vice President Biden was 10 days after the election. I looked him square in his face. I said, Mr. Vice President, I respect you, but I want to tell you one thing. If you don't do what we need you to do, we will vote you out.
Right. I hear you.
And we have to have the courage and the power and the tenacity to actually believe that and to do that, because we 19% of the electoral vote was young people. That's up 1% from 2008. We showed up. Black people showed up. Latinos showed up. Women showed up. So now it's time to flex our muscle and to tell the president and to tell his colleagues in the House, the Senate, and state houses across this country, this is what we want and this is when we want it. And if we don't have an agenda or we don't have something to tell them, then we're doing something wrong.
Okay, and I think that's pretty straightforward. You know, there has to be a political consequence for not delivering. I'm going to let people marinate on a few of these things that you suggested, because we're also running out of time, and I appreciate you sharing with us. If you can put on your global grind hat, what are some of the plans that you have in your organization over the next few months to really keep the momentum going and to really connect with the organizing that's going on? And I used a couple of examples, but, you know, let's say the battle around these tuition hikes, you know, what can you do or how can we make these connections stronger?
Well, I think that we've always believed that our greatest role is to shine spotlights give megaphones to people who are doing incredible work. We don't ever pretend that, you know, we are the ones who are doing incredible work. We just want to be involved with those who are doing it. So if there are young people around this country or older folks around this country who are doing the work and need help to bring more attention, you know, I got an email last week from some folks who are being charged for resisting stop and frisk. Immediately we put a story up. We tweeted about it. We put on social media. They were quite thankful for us, you know, helping them just get the message out. If there are folks who are in the UC system, again, this is where my heart is. I'm a UC graduate. If there's folks in the UC system who need help, please email me, editor-in-chief@globalgrind.com. We will do a story on it. We have access between myself, Russell, Global Grind. We're looking at close to 2.5 million people that our Twitter reaches. I'm not trying to brag or pat myself on the back, but last night, you know, we created that stay in line hashtag during the day on election day. And last night, I don't know Rachel Maddow, but Rachel Maddow put up my tweet last night during her program talking about how social media really helped folks and encouraged folks to stay in line. So I think we have a little bit of power and I think we have a little voice. And if we can use it for the right reasons, we'd be happy and proud and humbled to do it. So I always tell young people, I give my information all the time, wherever I speak and wherever I go. And I rarely get people reach out to me. I always tell young people, if you got the ball in your court, hit that damn ball as hard as you can. If you have access to myself, who's the political director, to the godfather of hip hop, I don't think I'm all that special, but I know my boss has done a few special things. You know, email me. It comes directly to my iPhone. It's not screened. It's not, you know, looked at by somebody else. It's looked at by me. I respond. I pick up the phone. I call people. You know, Davey, you've been an advocate for your whole life, and I always go on your show and talk to folks because I'm a huge fan of what you've done and what you've, you know, pushed forward our generation to do better. So editor-in-chief@globalgrind.com or my Twitter, you can at me. I look at Twitter all the time, at Michael Skolnick, Skolnick. Please get at me. I want to go to work for you. I want to go to work for the community. And I want to use my voice, the little that I have, and Russell's voice as well, to help our people, you know, have a better future.
Well, there you have it. Michael Skolnick, we appreciate you coming on and sharing with us how you see in the lay of the land as we We'll be talking with people all over the country about what are the next steps. Michael Skolnick, of course, editor-in-chief of Global Grind, and also was a key surrogate for this past campaign. So it's good to get an insider's perspective on this, and hopefully people take up the challenge and the offer that you have made to bridge those gaps and stay in touch. So once again, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Peace, Dave. Appreciate you.
Don't give a damn. If the rhymes don't fit, the DJ quit. This song don't give a damn. You can't sing or dance to it, can't romance to it. This song ain't arrogant if you don't try and buy it, or if your radio denies it. Don't care about what, who got, what's cool on TV, or what spots hot, I forgot. I ain't mad at evolution, but I stand for revolution. Get up, enough is enough. Hey, somebody stand up, come on.
Faces like mine fall through the waistline. None of my heroes appear on no stamp. What about the great ones? Nat Turner didn't turn, followed the sound of the sun. What about the great ones like Khalid and Elijah Muhammad, who made men like Ali and Malcolm X, who wouldn't break under pressure when facing the enemy? None of these heroes will appear on no stamp like Ashanti Shakur and Angela Davis, with Sojourner Truth, who made a way out of no way. What about the great ones like Queen Mother Moore and Betty Shabazz, Rosa Parks, who was sick and tired, who sparked the movement in the South? None of these heroes will appear on no stamps.
We continue in our